Chapter 20 and verse 22, rescue from grief. I suppose there are parts of 2 Samuel where the challenge of transferring the events and the people and the teachings and these various episodes is hard to transfer to our modern circumstances and our familiar lives. There is, of course, on the one hand, the fact that we're talking about something a long time ago, and then we're dealing with culture among God's covenant people at the time, and then with the circumstance where you have a king ruling as a monarch and defending his people and his territory. That part of it, maybe we have more difficulty thinking of how that's relevant to us. This, however, is one case where the experience does not need to be transferred. We understand it immediately, and we understand it sometimes too well and too personally. Remember that when we left this situation last week, Ahimaaz has coveted the opportunity to run and from the battlefield and tell King David that the victory has been won for his followers and by his army. Remember that Joab, the commander of David's forces, had disobeyed David's repeated request or order to deal gently with the young man Absalom for my sake. Well, in verse 20 of chapter 18, Joab tells Ahimaaz, you're not going to be the one who carries this message because the king's son has died. The young man insisted in outrunning the other messenger, and he got there first, and he told David that the victory had been won. But do you remember that that leaves David only leaning forward, not in excitement or relief, but in an anxiety? And that brings us to kind of where we start tonight, at verses 29 and 32 of chapter 18, with David saying to Ahimaaz, is it well? Is it well with the young man Absalom? Well, that puts us in a position where we may be able to imagine many circumstances in our lives where we have known the anxiety of concern over someone dear to us and someone who's been in a situation of risk and how things have turned out. Ahimaaz now finds himself on the spot. And what he does is to say, well, in effect, well, I only know that the battle has been won. I know there was a great commotion, but I don't know what it was, which wasn't exactly true. Joab had told him the king's son is dead. So David just has him, instead of celebrating the victory, just to stand aside there and wait till the other messenger off here in the distance arrives. The other messenger is the Cushite, or the man from Ethiopia, who's been sent also. And he arrives and he tells David, good news! The Lord has delivered you this day from the hand of everyone who rose up against you. And David once again is it well with the young man Absalom? Well, this messenger doesn't realize why there would be any hesitation. He says, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man. Meaning, of course, justice has befallen him. He's been dealt with, and he'll never bother you again. But instead of the anticipated celebration that the messenger might have thought would occur, what we find is one of the most heart-rending statements ever made anywhere in literature, and the most moving and eloquent statement of a father's grief for his son that could be uttered. Anyone who reads it immediately sees something of the power of the emotion in it and the deep grief that it embodies. It is, in verse 33 of this chapter, the king is deeply moved and he goes to the chamber over the gate where he had been sitting and he wept. And he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." It's hard to even read, isn't it? He does the same thing in chapter 19 and verse 4, where he has his head covered, his face covered, and he cries with a loud voice, "Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son." How do you deal with that kind of grief? Some of you who are reading along with us will have experienced that feeling and know too well what it is. How do you overcome? How do you deal with that kind of grief? Please stop and notice with me for a minute now what David feels in this situation. Obviously, there is a deep sense of grief. There is the agony of loss, and then all the emotions that attend it in this particular case. David not only grieves the loss of his son, but the loss of the relationship which had already been ruptured by Absalom's rebellion and the distance between them before that, and then possibly David deals with the sense that his own guilt is partly to blame in this case. David deals with this deep sense of grief over a period of time. It is a time-consuming process, we're given to understand as we read 2 Samuel. You know, those who have studied the emotion or the processes of grief that people go through have written over the last several years about the kinds of things that are normal as people go through this. And they'll tell us that there are stages to this. The stages don't happen necessarily in just this neat order, but some elements of these are generally present in what people experience. Denial, hoping that this is not true. Anger, you'll see some of that as we go through our study tonight. And then if it's something that someone hopes or wishes would not happen, there may be some bargaining that takes place between the person and the Lord or whoever. And then there'll be some aspect of, in the days following, of depression, loneliness, self-pity even, or other parts of that. And then finally, there is acceptance of reality that's there. There's no hint in Scripture that of the adage, time heals all wounds, or that these things will be over, you just need to get through it. And there's not that kind of talk. There's just the thought that somehow God brings comfort and mercy into the life of someone who needs it so badly when that person walks with him. That's really what's at stake in this story. A thoughtful reader of this whole part of 2 Samuel will notice some of those stages or experiences at work. David deals with this deep grief over time while life is going on. Now this is the part of the story that needs some thought from us. It would be one thing if something as painful as grief, if you could just take leave from the rest of life and be allowed to deal with your grief and the loss that's there, and then get back to the rest of it whenever you felt up to it. That'd be one thing. Unfortunately, that's not generally what people find themselves having to do. By the nature of it, grief is a part of life, and we work through it while we're dealing with life. This is the part of the story which in 2 Samuel becomes a problem, a special problem, because it's told to Joab, the commander of the army, who has attended to the death of Absalom. The king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. He sent us out here to fight this battle and to overcome the rebellion, and now he's weeping for him instead of celebrating with us. The victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people because the king was grieving his son. Should one person's grief have that kind of an impact in other people's lives? Well, it shouldn't, but sometimes it's a part of the story. So look at what David finds out as this story unfolds in chapters 19 and 20. While David is dealing with his deep grief, he finds out first that other people around have some unfeeling demands that are focused on immediate concerns. You'd like everyone to feel with you. Finding out that somebody else is not really concerned with what you're going through can be a hurt and a shock. In this passage, in verses 5 and following, Joab comes to the house where David is and talks to him with such direct harshness that it's unimaginable in some ways to us. But remember, David is the king, and a battle has been fought, and now peace has to be restored. And Joab says to him, you've today covered the faces of people who loved you and fought for you with shame. You're loving the one who hated you, and you're hating the ones who've loved you. And if you keep on doing this, by nighttime they're all going to flee and leave you alone, and you'll find yourself in the worst situation you've ever been. That's not exactly a comforting speech, is it? It adds pressure to sorrow. It adds a burden to the burdened in this case. That's what David found himself having to deal with in chapter 19, verses 5 through 7. You can kind of see what Joab is doing. He's dealing with the reality of the situation. But you can wish that a little more tenderness would have been shown. You may wish that in your own life from time to time. Then David finds next that in the wake of this tragedy in his life, everybody else is now, each of the other people are turning to their own interests. They have their own agenda, so to speak. They have their own concerns. Sometimes their concerns seem almost petty and so small that they don't belong in the picture. What happens in the passage here in verses 9 and following is that the people start dividing up their turf and arguing for their point of view. Some of them are saying, the king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the Philistines, but his son Absalom has made him flee. Others are saying, Absalom, who rebelled against him, is dead in the battle. There's an argument that develops here over this. But people don't know what to do. And as this chapter unfolds, it descends into an argument between Judah, who is the tribe that David is from, who have to be talked into accepting him because a lot of the people of Israel had already decided to own him again as their king. David had to see to it that Judah is talked into it, and then when they are talked into it, Judah welcomes him back across the Jordan and home by themselves without including the other tribes, and then that descends into an argument. Why'd you do it without us? We recognized him before you did. It seems like a small and selfish argument, but that's how life is. Then third, David has to deal with the lingering effects upon relationships that have been injured in the events that preceded the grief. Now these relationships have to be faced and they have to continue, and it's hard. David goes back, and as soon as he crosses the river, he's met by the people who sort of got left in the dust as he left town. There's the fellow who insulted him. There's a fellow who tried to ingratiate himself to get property that belonged to somebody else. There's Mephibosheth, the son of an old friend, and then there's a guy who had really been generous to David in his time of urgent need. When you are occupied with your own inner turmoil, it's easy to forget that there are still people around, relationships that have to be attended to, and some of them are thorny or are not comfortable. David had to do that. And then David found new challenges that had to be faced maybe before he's ready. There's a guy named Sheba from a family of Bichri, who was the second son of Benjamin, who seizes on the arguments already existing and tries to lead a rebellion of his own, consisting of several who ended up following him basically from his own clan or his own family. That's an unpleasant thing to deal with, but David had to face it when he was the most unprepared feelings-wise to deal with. What does David do when he finds... What would you do? What would I do? I'm pretty sure I would feel sorry for myself. I might resent it. I might try to evade some of this. I might put it off. How does David deal with life in the presence of his grief so that he comes through his grief able to function? Well, not perfect. He's a human being, but he does it. Here are some of the things that happen. One, he turns to responsibility. When Joab had confronted him in chapter 19 and verse 8, it says, "Then the king arose and took his seat in the gate." That began to make a difference in his life and the life of the people. He did it because he saw that Joab was telling him something that had to be done. A lot of things in life you do because they have to be done. And you find out that attending to responsibility is a help in the long run. David, second, allows himself to do his best and to live with that. He makes some wise choices and some that are pretty human. For example, in chapter 19, in verses 13 and 14, he first takes a guy named Amasa. Amasa is the fella who was Absalom made the captain of his forces in the rebellion against David. He could have been charged with being a traitor and have been executed. David took Amasa and made him the commander of his army in the place of Joab. Now he did it thinking that he would win the loyalty of the tribe Amasa is from, and from the southern parts of the country. But you wonder if that was really wise. On the other hand, the next verse says that in doing this, the heart of all the men of Judah was swayed. Later on, you find out that when David is on the spot and he tells Amasa to raise an army within 3 days, he doesn't do it, and then he has to be replaced. Only this time, David replaces him with Joab's brother, Abisha. And of course, that doesn't turn out to be a very good choice because all of the soldiers follow Joab anyway instead. Third, David deals mercifully and wisely with other people, even in these difficult circumstances. A guy named Shimei. Shimei was the guy who th- threw rocks at David and threw dust in the air and cursed at David when he was leaving town, leaving Jerusalem in great grief. When David crosses the river, this is the first guy who meets him, and he begins to plead with David to not hold that, not lay that to his heart, and not hold his sin against him and all of that. And Abishai, David's servant, begins to say, this guy needs to be, he deserves to be put to death. Let's do it right now. Don't let this dog live. David, however, hushes Abishai up, tells Shimei that this is a day when he, David, knows that he is king over Israel that day. It's not a day for settling scores. It's a day for restoring people's lives. And he makes an oath to let this guy live. On the other hand, there's Mephibosheth, whose land has been given to a fairly deceitful servant named Ziba when David was on his way out of town. Now Mephibosheth comes to David. David wants to know, why didn't you come to me? He says, I didn't have a mule to ride. I couldn't walk because I'm lame. David has a situation where he already gave the guy's property to Ziba. This is a case where David's wisdom is put to the test. It's a little bit like what Solomon later on does with the two women who claim the same child. David says here, all right, each one of you can have half the land. Divide the land. Chapter 18, verse 29. Mercy and wisdom. David remembers kindness shown to him in the past. Next. The remembering of kindnesses feeds a sense of gratitude, which reminds us that not everything that's happened in our lives has been bad. There's a guy here named Barzillai. Barzillai is the fellow who had supplied and provided for David and his troops when he was across the wilderness, across the river in exile. And now David offers this guy to come and live with him and to be provided, to enjoy every blessing of his household with him, because he doesn't want to forget what the guy has done to bless him and to be generous with him. In many ways, the counting of blessings is not saying to yourself, I don't have it so bad. It's remembering what other people have done to be a blessing in your life when you needed it. There are some, thank the Lord, there are people like that for most of us. And then David deals with the human reality. He accepts how things are. The case in point with this turns out to be Joab and all the things that David did. At least twice here, he specifically made efforts to get the guy who had disobeyed his order about Absalom removed from being commander of the army. But what happens is that old Joab kills another rival, like he had Abner in the beginning of this book. Now he does Amasa here with a concealed sword. Ends the man's life. Then he stands up and says, whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab. Notice that he's making the following for David. So when Joab gets back to Jerusalem, here he is again in chapter 20, verse 23. Joab is in command of all the army of Israel. That might not have been what David would have preferred, but David accepted it. When we pass through grief, some of where we come out is not, I'm over it now. I know I'm through it. I'm strong enough now. Some of it is simply we've learned to accept what we couldn't change anyway and to believe that God has helped us this far. Some of the things on this list are things that a lot of us have had to do at one time or another in our own ways. in working through very painful circumstances. What David knew before this event happened is that life includes episodes like this. Remember, he's lost Amnon. He's lost the baby that was born to him in Bathsheba. He's been through other kinds of sorrows like that, and yet he survives. And these are some of the reasons why. Now, this is what David felt and what David found out and what David did. That leaves us with one question, very briefly. What does God do in this? How can it be said by David later, "He rescued me"? There are at least three things here that God does, even in this sad story, that are so encouraging to me. One, God keeps His word. He had told David in chapter 7 and verse 16, "I'll establish your throne." And he did. Even in the face of rebellion and difficulty and grief, David is still the king. And in chapter 12, verse 10, God told him, "Because of what you've done, a sword shall rise up in your own household." And it did. And in verse 13 of chapter 12, he had told David, "You'll not die. Your sin's forgiven." And he hasn't. God keeps His word. Sometimes in the middle of grief, there's no place to drive your stake and to make your stand besides right here. God keeps His promises. He's faithful. Many times in the New Testament, this "He's faithful" is used to encourage people to hold on to their confession. The one who promised is faithful, the Hebrew writer says in chapter 10. Secondly, in the middle of all of this, bear in mind there's a pre-existing relationship. That the Lord involved in this picture and the David involved in this picture have relationships, so that David has been able to write, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And remember that what he's saying is that in this picture, even here, God is with him and he's comforting him and restoring him, like Psalm 23 said. You might remember, we sung it a few moments ago, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you are with me. Your rod, which holds me in line, and your staff, which rescues me, comfort me." I'm told by the language experts that the word for the valley of the shadow of death, that phrase, means the valley of deep darkness. I'd say David never passed through a deeper valley like that than he did when he cried out, "Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." The Scripture never specifically says it in these chapters here that we're reading, but you can tell if you watch that God is with him still, and that in ways that are not always obvious at the moment, comforting him and restoring him. Third, God continues onward toward his purpose. Notice carefully the way I've said this. Not, "This happens for a reason, everything happens for a purpose." Not that. Not, "Well, it was just God's will that this happened." That's not what I'm saying at all. In fact, I find that to be an idea that I can hardly stand myself. The point is, as Acts 13, verse 36 puts it, David served the purpose of God in his generation. God was moving toward a purpose when he first made David king, when he first chose him. And God keeps on moving toward that purpose. David has a place in the story. His life has meaning for that reason. And the meaning continues. These are things that God still promises to do with and for His children when we pass through griefs in our lives. If we can hang in there, if we can walk with the Lord, He can help us. And He can help us in ways that turn out to be to bless other people as time goes along. I want to return for just a moment now to 2 Samuel 22, where the song is that the idea of rescued comes from. I want to read two sections of it very quickly and ask you to consider it, these words now, in the light of David's grief over the loss of Absalom. Here it is, 2 Samuel 22, verses 5 and 6. For the waves of death encompassed me, the torrents of destruction assailed me, the cords of Sheol, the cords of the pit entangled me, the snares of death confronted me. Here that happens not with his own death, but with the death of someone he loved, despite that person's weaknesses and failures. A few verses later, in verses 17 through 19, he says, He, the Lord, sent from on high and took me and drew me out of many waters. He rescued me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too mighty for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a broad place. He rescued me because He delighted in me. That's the God that we're trying to serve. We're glad to have brothers and sisters with us on the journey. Thank you all for studying with us tonight. Let's sing together.